Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 44, for September 9th, 2013. My name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Adam Forrestal.
Gentlemen, first full week of the kids back to school. Well, most of us, except for, you know, our certain co-host here, he's getting used to life beyond the schooling.
Yep.
Exactly.
Let's say that.
How are you finding it?
Boring.
Boring?
Yep.
Get a job?
I'd love to.
I know, wouldn't we all?
Yes.
Exactly. Yep. So, okay. Let's get right to it. Now, first of all, not 2 hours after we went off air last week, and for this I blame Steve Ballmer personally, this is actually the reason why he's leaving. Just...
Because he didn't send us an email?
He didn't send me an email. I'm just saying.
We somehow represent the board at Microsoft?
Apparently.
Excellent. That would be awesome. That's good.
Microsoft.
Bad job after all.
Microsoft and Nokia announced Microsoft's buying Nokia. It'd be more funny if Nokia bought Microsoft, but...
Yeah.
You know.
In what universe?
I think we would have gone for a special on that one.
Nokia Windows.
Exactly. You know, this is something where, Nokia's been a big supporter of Microsoft over the years.
Yep.
$7.6 billion. Either of you surprised about this, or what are your reactions post-deal?
I guess I'm not surprised. I guess I thought Nokia would be worth more than $7.6 billion. Maybe that's me thinking of Nokia from 10 years ago when they were kind of the top of the tech world.
Yeah, they've kind of lost some market share. I think there's like one or two little companies that have kind of started to take that over.
Yeah. What are those?
You may have heard of them.
Yeah.
Apple and I think Google.
Yeah. Goggles or something. Yeah. I'm on board. I think I'm the only person in this room who keeps talking about what a great product Windows 8 is. I think this is a good move for Microsoft to be able to kind of make their own handsets and hardware.
Windows 8 on the phone or Windows 8 on the computer?
In general.
Okay, I'll agree with you on the phone.
I think Windows 8 phone is an excellent platform, and I don't know if this helps Microsoft make cohesive devices. I think they're in good shape, although the other side of that coin is I never thought there was anything wrong with the Nokia devices, so I guess it's just Microsoft trying to get all their thoughts together more than anything else.
I think it's a good move.
Me too.
I think that it'll be interesting to see what Microsoft does with this, because they built the Surface, for example, as their first example of in-house hardware, and they're essentially buying their way into the in-house hardware manufacturing for handsets.
Correct.
So I think it's a natural progression. It'll also be interesting to see if they, say, buy up BlackBerry over the next while. Although I don't know if they would be that bold.
I saw what you did there.
Hey.
He's been waiting all week for that joke, I bet. the other interesting thing was there was a interesting opinion piece in The Guardian today by Seth, and I always screw up his name, so I apologize in advance, Shulinar. And he talked about, you know...
Close enough.
Yeah. Maybe what they're looking at here is, you know, at this point, do you devote a ton of time and resources trying to unseat the big two at the moment, given the fact that, you know, in markets, people rise, companies rise and fall. Mm-hmm. This may be Apple's and Google's time. Maybe more focus on the lower end market, something we were saying maybe BlackBerry should have done. Third world, less complicated devices. So we have the link in the show notes. It was an interesting reading. I just wondered if either of you had a time to really, other than just glance through it, or any comments about that idea. Maybe Microsoft's trying to capture the rest of the world market, shall we say?
That could very well be. There's certainly a world market out there. When we talk about cell phones in North America, we're typically thinking about the premium devices. We typically discuss, you know, the latest, greatest Apple and Google phones.
And we will next week.
We certainly will next week after tomorrow, but more on that later. Very rarely is there a heavy discussion, at least amongst tech people, of what is the best available entry-level device. What can I get for not very much money?
What's the best cell phone that's good enough device?
Exactly,
you know,
right.
We talk about ecosystems. You know, we have to remember there is a third ecosystem now.
Yep.
And we have to keep that in mind.
My only fear is that if that's Microsoft's intention, that we'll lose the premium-level Windows 8 devices, and maybe that's the right play, but I would hate to see that. I think there's a lot of unique things that have been coming out in some of the Windows 8 premium devices that nobody else is doing. And I think having to get Windows 8 to get those features, like a 41-megapixel camera, is not the worst thing ever. The only thing wrong with the Windows 8 ecosystem as it is a lack of apps.
desktop.
And that's always been a big thing. We've talked about that same thing for the BlackBerry and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait and see. I think in terms of if they can get some good solid products, and that's one thing Apple does well because they control both the software and the hardware.
Right.
They're really able to get over both on the computing side and the tablet mobile side.
Well, and that's why Microsoft has shone a little bit, at least with the Surface, just because they were controlling both ends of things, so they can make it as good as possible.
Right.
And so if they can leverage that with Nokia, or with the now enveloped Nokia as part of Microsoft, it'll be nothing but a good thing. And I think we'll see them as, right now, an entry-level device working towards breaking into the premium market. I can't see them not wanting to do that. But if there's territory up for grabs, I think they'd be stupid right now to not go after it.
Yep.
Well, the other thing, too, is in this deal as well, Nokia grants Microsoft a 10-year license for its portfolio of patents.
Yep.
So there's a lot of valuable IP there. The other interesting thing, some speculations has been happening, is the CEO of Nokia, Stefan Elop. He's actually a Canadian, but he's now a very strong candidate in the rumor mill be the successor to Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer. So,
well, I mean, why not? You've got a CEO being brought on board, and it would play out almost picture perfect with Ballmer saying, well, over the next year I'm going to step down. So theoretically it would take about that long to train a successor, assuming that it's met the approval of the board, etc. So
right. Well, and again, it'll be interesting to see what happens ahead, considering all the speculation we've had about, you know, whether Steve Ballmer was forced out, how he was forced out, what sort of timeline. Mm-hmm. The quote's basically been, I'm going to be retiring within the next 12 months. So depending who you get, that could be sooner or later. And they obviously want to do it based on market timing. You don't want to be in the middle of a major shakeup when you're about to introduce new products and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, moving on.
Talking about surfaces
and things like that. Surface Pro 2 with extras planned. Okay, who did this story?
I did.
Jamie must have. I think either one of us could talk about it. This is an update of one of my favorite products. But yeah, Jamie, go for it.
No, you're the
Microsoft.
Microsoft.
He's trying to say you're the Microsoft.
I'm apparently
fanboy.
The guy pushing Microsoft.
Yeah, you are the fanboy.
Let's talk about what's coming up. So Microsoft has announced, or I guess they haven't officially announced anything. We've begun seeing what is going to come out as far as a Surface 2, a new version of the Surface. They actually have an event planned for the last week of the month to try and show some of it off. It doesn't sound like we're going to see too much visually different about the new Surface devices, just hardware updates that we kind of expect.
Internals.
Internals, an upgrade for the RT to the Tegra 4, and presumably the Pro is going to get a Haswell chip.
I would hope so.
The minor adjustments that are interesting for me are that the kickstand is going to be adjustable, and something that I think is possibly overdue for this, they're calling it the power cover. This kind of takes a page out of the book of the Asus Transformer tablets, where the keyboard will support, basically has a battery in it and will provide extra battery life to the tablet when it's used.
Isn't that like a docking station?
It sounds a lot like a docking station.
Didn't Microsoft swear we'll never see a docking station for the Surface?
Well, probably it won't have any ports on it. I suspect it's going to be a slimline keyboard similar to what's available now, possibly with a little extra weight just to extend the battery life.
Which would be nice.
Are we talking strictly Surface, like with full Windows, or are we talking RT?
Now, that's what gets under my skin, and I'm a little bit disappointed in Microsoft this time around. I was hoping very much that they would abandon ARM chips and Windows RT this time around completely. I was really hoping for an Atom-level Surface tablet. An Intel Atom-powered Windows 8, none of this RT stuff,
yep,
tablet. And I don't think we're going to get it. I think
they've got too much invested in the RT line of things right
well,
now.
Yes and no.
Yes and no, yeah. I think they've also got to realize that you get a lot invested, but clearly coming out of the gate, it definitely faltered.
Yeah.
And they're still having problems distinguishing it. And one of the biggest things they did was they called it the same thing.
Yep, yep.
And people saw that and they go, gee, why should I spend $600 for this one where I can buy this one and I can run whatever I want?
Yep.
And it wasn't clearly explained, no, you can't run whatever you want.
And they may have, They may have money invested in the operating system, but it's almost like they should cut their losses. There's no one else supporting RT at this point. Asus has dropped their RT tablets. Samsung has dropped their RT tablets.
Well, and especially when we've got all of the, like, the Atom and the Haswell-based chips, they're so
efficient. The new Atoms are incredible.
You can run a full suite of software.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. Why would a company like Asus continue to work on the RT stuff when they've got the power back?
Exactly. I could certainly see, you know, RT is the sort of thing, if Microsoft was making a 7-inch tablet, a true tablet.
Yep.
But again, they really confused the line, both hardware and software, when they came out with the Surface and the Surface RT.
And even in the pricing, I mean, ignoring the Surface entirely, there were Windows 8 tablets available for iPad-level pricing that had Windows 8 powered by Atom with a lot of other features to them. Asus had a great one out for a long time that unfortunately has been discontinued, but hopefully we see some Atom stuff from them again. Windows 8 works really well on a tablet, and I wish they would drop the RT. To me, it would have made more business sense for them to go Atom-powered. Atom-powered.
It might have worked.
Yes, Atom-powered Windows 8.1 tablets. That would be great. Now, to their credit, it does seem there's a Windows 8.1 variant of RT. It's not going to be stock RT. Whatever updates that Windows 8 are getting, it seems RT is going to get them too. But I still think that it's almost a waste. I understand the premise. The premise is that you're supposed to use it like it's a tablet and access the store and get your apps from the store.
You know, and they were copying what they'd seen Apple doing and stuff like that. But again, I think by trying to make Windows 8 all things, it further muddied the waters.
I agree. The problem with RT primarily, when you force people to go through the store, is that people... What's the right way to say this? There aren't very many apps in the store. There certainly aren't enough to make everybody happy. You can't get every feature you want because the apps to fill some of the software gaps that are inherent to an operating system just aren't there. If only Microsoft had an operating system or ecosystem that had lots of available software that would let you do whatever you wanted, perhaps they could solve this problem.
Windows XP.
Yes. So that's kind of where I'm at. They have an ecosystem. They have what they need to solve their problem on the Surface RT, and they're just not using it.
Jameson, you know what? I think Microsoft should consider another candidate for CEO.
Yes.
Yeah, we might. Yep. You know, I think
Master Atom here.
Yes.
Yes.
Some of us need jobs. Microsoft, give me a call.
Here we go. He'd probably even move down.
I think he would.
Absolutely, I'd love to live in Seattle. That'd be great.
Here we go. Actually, oh, you failed. It's Redmond. It's not Seattle. Redmond.
That's right. Redmond.
There's a difference.
Yes.
You ask most Microsoft people, they get very annoyed when you say Seattle.
It's like Van and North Van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, it just knocked him out. Okay, tomorrow, our good friends at Apple.
Tomorrow is going to be fun.
They have an event planned. And as usual with these events, they never fully admit anything, but the leaks are wide and going and everything. So, looks like we're going to probably see a new iPhone, certainly, or two.
Am I the only one who wants, like, a bright-colored, like, blue or yellow iPhone?
I really want one, too. I think they're phenomenal.
But you know what? You know, and now, see, for me, I frankly don't care, because the way I treat my iPhone, it goes into a nice case like this. I never see what color.
Well, fair enough. I can't argue with that.
I would rather have one like that, so that if the back cover is replaceable, you can just pop it off and replace it more easily.
Back cover is replaceable on these guys. It's pretty easy to get off.
Yeah.
I've seen plenty of people with modded iPhone 5s that have a metal plate that's blue or something on the back.
Okay, so let's get into this. So we're definitely hearing rumors. We're going to be seeing two new iPhone devices. We're going to be seeing possibly going to be called the iPhone 5S, which is going to be basically the same form factor as the existing 5, but probably going to have some
better chip in it.
Better chip. Possibly a better camera.
There's been rumblings that it's going to have fingerprint recognition built into the home button.
Yeah, we've heard rumors about that too.
Please give us better battery life.
Multicolor.
Yes, please.
We have heard there might be some more colors involved.
Champagne.
Black and white. Champagne
for the top end. And we're only talking about 5S?
Yeah. Yeah, so now, the only thing I think it's funny is because I wonder if one of the reasons is because what happens when you normally, you know, they needed something to distinguish that you've got a 5S over a 5, right?
Yes.
You know, just like when the 4 and the 4S came out.
It was Siri.
You know, I remember when I got my, you know, it looks the same as a 4.
Right.
Right? You know, so yep. Maybe by having champagne, you know, because part of the thing is I think when some people
How
buy
many
these
people
devices.
Are gonna buy it?
I don't know.
Just because, you know what, I bet you there will be people that way, oh, yeah, see? You know, you put it down and, oh, you have a new iPhone.
Oh, it's a champagne.
You know, we're different from the 4.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, no, but the difference between the 4 and the 5. The four
size,
and the
size.
Five, size.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think there'll be a little bit of that. Okay, the other one is an interesting one. It's going to be called possibly the iPhone 5C, and this is going to be a lower-end market phone designed for emerging markets, possibly.
Or the good enough phone for developed markets.
Yeah. Right. So there's been talk, multiple colors, going to be probably built out of a polycarbonate shell,
which is the same as the white MacBooks before they discontinued those.
Yep.
But
exactly.
hopefully, well, like I said, if you can make those more replaceable or at least a little bit more durable.
Yep.
Yep. Possibly a slower processor, maybe something that's currently in the 4 or something
4S,
like that. Yeah. Something like that.
Probably be 4S internals,
right.
If I had a guess.
Right. Whole bunch of
two models back. That sounds right.
Yeah. Whole bunch of different colors.
The speculation on it for cost is somewhere in the $350 to $400 range, which is just under half of what forgive me, it's just over half of what a current iPhone costs,
nice.
Top
okay.
and top.
Which is kind of nice.
We're also hearing these phones, especially the new 5S, or what it's going to be called, will be launched with iOS 7. So that means iOS 7 will be released at the same time as the iPhone. We've been hearing rumors about September 20th.
Yep.
Big change in the look and feel of the system.
Overdue.
Some of the rumors have said store staff, stuff like that, have already been going through some intensive training because there is some things we haven't heard about yet that may challenge some people. So they're obviously changing some ways of, you know,
some functionality.
Yeah, maybe different ways. So they're anticipating an increase in support calls.
It's time.
Yeah, it's time.
I mean, they haven't really changed the OS interface or anything dramatically since the 3 release.
I mean, obviously with their NDAs for the developers, there hasn't been a lot been released. So there might be some significant, like, who knows? They might have put in some brand new apps or software that no other company.
Not out of the question.
Yep. Well, one of those things is possibly iTunes Radio. We were hearing about that at WWDC.
Be nice.
So that could be a possibility. Next thing is iPods, iPads. Probably we're not going to hear anything about that.
That's
pretty out. And in fact, I heard something late today. It's almost for sure, especially on the iPad side. We're not going to be.
Yeah, I'm expecting
normally a separate event, usually in October. Probably we'll see something there. OS X Mavericks.
I think we'll
get a release date, or think that'll be...
I think I'm starting to see more whispers that Apple has secretly been planning this to be a bit of an announcement / launch for new Macs as well.
Yeah,
that's a possibility.
Whether it ends up being Macs whether it ends up being iMacs or MacBook Pros is up in the air.
But I think if they do that. Yeah, Mac Pro, I still think we're going to be a little while longer. And I think when they release some of the new Macs, I think that's when they're going to give the release date for Mavericks.
I think it won't be the Mac Pro because they've already shown it off. They have no need to go to a big conference and say, hey, look, this is the Mac Pro, because they've already done that once. They even showed us all the internals.
Yeah.
All they really have to give us on the Mac Pro is the release date.
Yeah.
My suspicion is if they're going to bother using the conference for anything, it's not going to be the Pros. It's going to be iMacs or MacBook Pros. Which they'll release in tandem with Mavericks.
Yeah.
I
suspect if they are going to launch multiple things, they'll say, well, the Mac Pro is launching along with these MacBook Pros and these iMacs.
That'd be great. I mean, that'd be great to see. I think Apple's focus should be their consumer level stuff. I mean, the Mac Pros have been ignored for so long. I know we need a refresh on them, but they don't sell nearly enough. Their market share, how it's split up, is.
Oh,
it's probably a fraction.
Yeah.
It's yep. fraction yep. Mac Pros yep. and a huge percentage MacBooks and iMacs.
Definitely.
I bet you we'll see I would almost bet that we'll see a release date for Mavericks for the 20th, this or whatever day the iOS the update to iOS releases, based on what they're showing off as some of the functionality of working between your devices in Mavericks.
That would be brave.
Because I think the only thing is, I think in the past, they've never done an OS X and an iOS on the same day.
With good reason, I think.
Yeah, because
they've got
load.
But they haven't had some of the integrations baked into each of them.
No, but what'll happen is there'll be an iTunes update. to accommodate the new devices, and then further down the road. I have to agree with Adam. I can't see that all happening on the same day.
It's too much for the servers. It's too much for support. I can't imagine they would even try. Now, I'd love to be wrong here. Don't get me wrong. Like, I would love to be wrong. I'd love to see both of the OSs come out in 2 weeks. That would be great. But it feels like too much at a time.
We're either gonna see it before Christmas, maybe an October announcement, or we're gonna see it at the same time the Mac Pro is announced early in the year.
Fair enough.
That's my prediction. So anyway, live coverage starts on all your favorite tech sites at 1 p.m.
1 o'clock.
Yep.
1 o'clock Eastern, because they always do the announcement at 10.
And those of us who are unemployed have nothing better to do than to watch it anyway. So it'll be great.
We'll see. Maybe we'll get a Google Hangout started or something.
Hey, what's a Google Hangout?
You will discover. It's a multi-chat, you silly boy.
Is that like Skype?
Better.
Uh-huh.
More stable. Okay, next. BlackBerry. Their shares went up today. A report of a buyout happening. A lot of rumors. This was actually from one of their people that used to be on the board. So this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone, an asset fund. They're still having the issues. What do we say?
Hmm?
Crickets.
Yeah.
We do it every week now. I mean, there's not a whole lot to...
They're close to a rescue deal. Who knows? We've also heard stories. The messaging side's going to be split off. I think at the moment, you're going to be seeing these little uptakes, and the stock traders and that are going to be having a field day. I think we're obviously going to have to hear more.
Oh. Sorry, carry on. I have another small piece of BlackBerry news that I'll get to in a second.
Okay. One of the other things, actually, I was going to say, is your BlackBerry news about the app?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep. You can cut, because I was going to mention that anyway.
It looks like, as of today, BBM for iOS has officially hit Apple for review.
It's been a couple. Actually, the story is it was actually a couple. They've been waiting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've been waiting about two weeks, but they've kind of publicized it today.
It's pretty much ready.
Apple work a little bit faster.
Yeah. Pretty much ready for appearance in the iTunes Store. No word if that's going to be kind of similar in release to the 5C and 5S, if they're trying to do everything together, because that's big news that we're going to get BBM on iOS. I would hate for BBM to become the killer app on the 5C to differentiate from the iPhone 5.
Well, but that's the possibility. But again,
if BlackBerry gets in bed with Apple, though, that's actually
good for BlackBerry.
It is.
We're gonna talk a little bit later about BBM and security with the NSA and a story a little bit later on, which kind of negates some of that. But as I said, we will basically cover that as well. So again, we'll just keep watching. I don't like to call it the Death Watch, but
it kind of is.
We should start a counter. BlackBerry Death Watch, week 12.
We could do music and everything.
Oh, we should have it. The Storm Chaser music and like the whole... Yeah, great.
Okay, next story. Nexus 4.
This is one of mine. I think I follow the Nexus products a little more carefully than you guys do. The Nexus 4 has been one of my favorite things on the market since its inception. I've always known that if anything happened to my iPhone 5, my go-to backup phone was always going to be the Nexus. It was too unbeatable for the price to be able to get an unlocked, high-quality phone for about $250-$300.
Yep.
They recently dropped the price on them. You can now get a Nexus 4 for $200 or $250, which is incredible. I mean, for what it's got available to it, even if you just want it as a media player, if you want a touch media player that isn't an iPod, this is a really great option. More to the point, the 8 gig has sold out. And it looks like Google has no intention of putting anything back into it. The 8-gig Nexus is gone. Following the price cut, it sold out, and they're not bothering to restock. And the 16-gig is kicking around, but they're starting to say it's got limited availability. So what we're thinking, and by we, I mean the internet at large, is that they're trying to make headway for a Nexus 5, something else to be released to...
Which would be nice.
It'd be great. Hey, if they can keep the cost down and release a premium-level phone. I know plenty of people who switched from GS3s to Nexus 4s.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a go-to great phone, and for the cost, it was absolutely unbelievable. For them to be pushing them out at $250, I recommended one to a friend today. They bought one right in front of me.
Yep.
They're great devices. So it's...
Now, do they put out a Google native version?
It is Google native.
Okay.
The Nexus 4, it's a Nexus product, so it is Google's branding.
Yeah.
LG manufactures it. It runs vanilla I shouldn't give it a food name because they all have food names already, but for lack of a better word term, it runs.
But you can, if as soon as an update comes out from Google, you can apply it.
Exactly
to
right. That's really the draw of the Nexus products. That's why Samsung went so far as to release a Google edition GS4.
Yep.
Was because some people, especially developers, really wanted the functionality of being able to jump into the updates as soon as they were available. So that's it's a Nexus product. It can get the updates right away, and so.
Well, and to be fair, if I was going to pick up an Android device, I would want to pick up one like the Nexus, where it's stock Google.
Yep.
There's nothing. There's no bloatware. There's nothing added in. It's just what Google has released.
Exactly right, which makes it nice and easy to keep current. One of the biggest issues I have with Android is fragmentation of the OS, and this kind of product gets around that completely.
Exactly.
But, a little bit of a surprise that the 8 gig is gone. So hopefully we see an LG-Google pairing for a Nexus 5 shortly.
Very cool. Okay. Also going on to hardware, our good friends at Lenovo have introduced a sequel to a product that we actually found was rather interesting.
Yes. I don't know who caught this one. Jamie, did you add this one in?
I added it in, but I know we were talking about it earlier.
Take it.
So Lenovo has announced the Yoga 2. So the Yoga 2 Pro, as well as, I believe, a non-Pro version as well.
The ThinkPad version.
Yeah. Great device. I mean, the Yoga was a phenomenal device, and so if they can make it better...
Yeah, I mean, the Yoga was already... You didn't see... I know I've made this point before, but you didn't ever see a Windows 8 commercial that didn't feature the Yoga.
Yeah, exactly. And it's where I could actually say, yeah, the new Windows 8 interface,
yep,
which I still call Arrow, mm-hmm, but anyway,
whatever.
I shouldn't.
The Pro.
Because it's never been called Arrow,
so
you really shouldn't call it Arrow.
I know, but I call it Arrow. I don't know why.
Arrow was introduced,
I know, the old
Vista.
One, yeah, I know. Isn't that, it's pretty sad? Well, because I thought it was lame as Vista at first. But no, I actually, you know, in a full tablet mode, yeah, that's where Windows 8. Yep. Kind of made sense.
This has been a big flagship. The Yoga, the original Yoga, has been a big product for Microsoft.
Yeah. So they're redoing it, and
it's getting old. Let's just say that.
Old, yeah.
It's a little.
So they're putting in new Haswell chips, obviously.
Right. Of course, the upgrade to the had the third gen, so upgrade to the fourth gen. They're making it thinner.
Yep.
They're making it lighter.
They're putting in better hinges.
And somehow they're extending the battery life. So it's thinner and it's lighter, but it also lasts longer. And this is, let Jamie take it, this is the big one.
The screen resolution is 3200 by 1800.
3200 by 1800.
Holy mackerel.
That's, I mean, we're in Retina display range, right?
Yeah,
we're similar to the
display.
Retina Pros.
Yeah. And it's not quite, double 1080p, but it's getting up there.
Well, it's double 1600 by 900.
Yeah.
That was the premise. So they've basically created a 1600 by 900. I've noticed in the previews for this that it does something. Maybe I should say it doesn't do something that Retina Pros do.
What? Besides turn around all the way around.
Well, besides going all the way around, the Yoga seems to run a version of Windows 8 that is optimized for its 3200 by 1800 screen.
Excellent.
If you use, to my knowledge, if you use Windows on a MacBook, Retina MacBook Pro, and try to make it run on its native resolution, you end up with tiny images and objects, because that's what happens when
and
you go
text
to super high resolution.
Outside of weird breaking stuff.
I wouldn't know because I don't have a Retina MacBook
Pro. Right, absolutely. If you tone it down to the 1600 by 900 setting, it isn't like OS X. OS X on a Retina MacBook Pro, for anyone who doesn't quite get it, is refined for the Retina display.
Yeah,
it kind of works like it's the regular resolution, but the icons and stuff have all been remade in high def, so in a higher resolution, so that they fill the same amount of space as they would have on the older screen.
Right, the text is smooth, so the idea is that it looks crisper.
Right, everything fills the same amount of space as it would have on the original model MacBook Pros. It's just cleaner and crisper. That's why they switched to this screen.
Yep.
Windows never worked that way. You either had it stretching in the old mode, or you had it tiny in the native mode, and it looks like the new Yoga is running a version of Windows that's, and maybe it's just the stretched 1600 by 900, but it kind of gives me the impression that Microsoft has finally refined themselves for
high-res display.
This kind of high-res display.
And the Engadget article that we're linking here is saying that the Yoga 2 will be available in October, starting at $1,100.
Wow.
Not bad price.
Worth mentioning a couple of other things. They gave it wide-eye because they have to. Ultrabooks have to have wide-eye now. You can get it with up to i7, which is remarkable. And very cool is the new ThinkPad. The big feature in the ThinkPad, I should distinguish, my understanding is the ThinkPad model does not include the super high-res display.
Yeah.
That may be incorrect, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
If that's the case, then they're going to have even better battery life, or they should, theoretically.
Yeah. It also doesn't have solid state. It uses a regular hard drive up to a terabyte.
It's also got the traditional ThinkPad keyboard.
And
with a little red button in the middle, which I love.
And most significantly, and I think this is the real reason they introduced it, is one of the big complaints that some users had about the Yoga is when you flip the screen back, the keyboard is exposed.
Yes.
And there's been a bit of a concern there. Now, the keyboard is smart enough to turn off when the Yoga sits in tablet mode.
Yep.
So you can't accidentally press any keys. Well, you can press them. Nothing happens.
People, I think, were concerned about damaging the keys.
I think they were. They think they were. So the new ThinkPad model, as you flip the screen around, triggers something that it's probably mechanical that just pulls the keys up into the unit.
Yep.
So they're still exposed, but I assume they're A, completely depressed, so you can't push them in any farther, and B, it looks like they're in far enough that their natural indentation kind of into the groove of the keyboard deck on the laptop. What am I saying here? It looks like the external plastic around the keyboard ends up being taller than the keys themselves,
so
if you set it down, you don't do any damage to anything.
Yeah.
Really great if your big concern is
exactly.
There's longevity and durability.
Well, yeah, and it's going to start at a slightly lower price point, $949, and as you say, it doesn't have the high-res display.
Right.
I consider it more, you know, sounds like more, it's made of magnesium alloy, so it's more of the business sort of thing.
They didn't, they called it the proper magnesium alloy. They didn't license Vapor Mag from Microsoft.
Yeah. I guess not.
Either way, it's good, though, to see Lenovo continuing along these trends. Because, I mean,
the Yoga last year, again, one of my favorite products. Yeah. I'm sure this year, it's nice to see them innovating might be the wrong word. They're taking the right cues, anyway. It's nice to see them developing on what was already an exceptional product.
Well, and they're
to continue to create an exceptional product.
And I think what they're doing and what they're doing well is that they're targeting their market that they know is their market. And they're not trying to push out into, at least for like the ThinkPad, for example, they're not trying to radically change it. They're not trying to radically make it different. They're just iterating and making it a better and stronger device. Yep.
Right. And hopefully we'll have, maybe we'll get a review unit in.
That'd be good.
That would be very nice.
Stay tuned for that. Okay, we're about halfway through the show. I want to have a quick plug.
Go right ahead.
You know, plugging myself and our good friends at CleverHost. CleverHost, awesome web hosting. They've recently launched a couple of new plans. Couple of new things. Jameson, you're kind of involved in the web industry and
occasionally
do some content and
some web
run some websites and that.
Yep.
You know, I think a lot of people these days, personal website. What if I could give them 1 gig of storage, 10 gig of traffic, 10 domains, 24/7 support, including live support from 9 to 5. How much per year or even per month would you think someone would have to pay for that?
Oh, I think someone would have to pay at least $20 a month.
At least $20 a month, okay? Well, let me tell you. I can give you that for $34.95 a year.
Oh, wow.
$2.91 per month through CleverHost.
Wow.
That's the really clever plan. They got a very clever plan now.
Yep.
Which is
it even more clever?
It's even more clever. That's why it's very, very clever. Unlimited storage, unlimited traffic, unlimited domains, 24/7 support. Now, when we say unlimited, it truly is as long as you're not impacting other people. There isn't a reasonable thing. You're not going to be hosting the entire archive of you know every television network around.
So it's unlimited in that it's reasonable.
Reasonable, unlimited. Okay. So anyway, how much do you think that would be?
Oh, that would have to be at least $50 a month.
At least $79 a year.
Oh, wow.
I can give you for that.
Unbelievable.
And Adam's handed me a note here. He says, call now and we'll double the offer. All right. And so
but how
I assume,
can you double unlimited?
How can we double unlimited? Adam, let me tell you, you are so mistaken. Okay. Actually, if you call now, we'll give you a date with Adam.
Ooh. The girlfriend might not like that so much.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Super clever. Super clever.
Super clever.
I didn't make these up. That's
hey.
Derek. For $109 per year, you get you get basically everything, very clever offers, but you get your own dedicated IP, which I know people, you know, people in your line of work kind of think that's important.
Yep.
And a free SSL certificate.
Oh, wow.
So all that for $109 a year, and that's $9.16 a month.
Oh, my.
I remember years ago, as you said, paying $20 a month for fraction of that.
Oh, yeah.
10 meg of space or stuff like that. So anyway, other thing they feature, very easy to use. They use the widely known CC panel. So very easy to set up if you want to run a WordPress blog or shopping cart.
And he uses a great program called Installatron with lots of software built right into
it. Exactly, exactly. So definitely give them a try. More importantly, I will give you, and this is where I kind of laugh at Adam's note, I'll actually give you 10% off your first month if you go in through our link. And I will post that in the show notes again. And anyone who signs up, they can use that. It's a limited time offer. I've only got so many of those. But again, 10% off your first month, the already excellent pricing. Great support, great service from our friends at CleverHost. Adam, you're just dying to say something. I can just tell. You should, you know what? You think I'm good? You should hear my buddy, Sean Quigley.
I just, you know, Ron Code themselves could not have written that ad any better than you guys.
There you go. There you go. Come down to Mel's Stereo Shop. No, in all seriousness, they're really good folks, and I do support them as well. I recommend it to my customers. And actually, we run this website. We run this show on them.
That's right. My sarcasm aside, is only directed at Stuart. It's not directed at CleverHost, who do exceptional work.
Very, very wisely. In your case, when you sign up, we'll add an extra 10%.
Should have expected.
You should have expected that. So. Okay, let's continue. What's our next story, Jameson?
I think something about governments and spying.
Oh, yes. The NSA and GCHQ able to spy on smartphones, including BlackBerry.
Should I take a walk or like...
They're already out to get you.
You guys are going to be at this for a while, I'm sure.
No, not necessarily. We want your input.
All right, let's do it.
So tell us about it, Adam.
Yeah, right.
This is another revelation through The Guardian, Der Spiegel, New York Times. A lot of this come from the Snowden reports. They've actually cracked BlackBerry's encryption scheme in addition to the other cell phone makers. So this really shouldn't come as a surprise. And this comes back to what I was saying before, is one of the selling points of BBM used to be, oh, it's secure and all this sort of thing. Well, how secure is it now? So is it worth...
Well, this article, as best I can tell, specifically addresses emails. So talk to me about BBM, because...
If emails can be cracked...
I guess that's true. Once you get into the system somewhere, you can probably get into it somewhere else.
I know there's been a few stories this past week talking about how the NSA has been going after companies like Google and BlackBerry and Apple, basically to not soften up their encryption keys, but to get their master encryption keys so they can just go in whenever they want. Under the guise of it will make everyone safer.
Well, and again, it looks like in this case, from what we're reading, they basically brute forced it. They had a special group dedicated to try and crack this.
Wow, which is kind of impressive in and of itself, because these are supposed to be the top ends of security to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Well, we can also look back to an article in June from the Guardian newspaper where during the last G20, British and U.S. intelligence sources were providing their respective governments and diplomats with near real-time information of what was being said by other countries through their thing. So, yeah, I think BBM's been cracked. Again, I guess this shouldn't come as a surprise, but what does this say?
BBM has always had this reputation of being one of the most kind of secure messaging systems out there. How active do we know how active BlackBerry has been in trying to stay on top of new encryption to try and increase kind of the safety of what they've been doing? Or have they been sitting on this, you know, most secure kind of thing available? Do we know kind of how active?
I don't think we know, because that would be kind of pretty proprietary.
Fair enough. I have to give you that. I know, like, for example, Google has been going out of their way to try and separate themselves from the work the NSA has been doing. And
right. But I think the problem there is that they may have been mandated as a U.S.-based company.
Right.
To provide some of this stuff, and they can't, again, by law, they can't talk, and that's with the focus of this lawsuit.
There has been some discussion from Google that there have been some, I guess accusation might even be the best word. There's been some accusations from Google. The NSA have almost actively tried to encourage tech companies to reduce the amount of encryption they've been using.
Yep.
And to kind of separate their stand from the NSA, Google, even as recent as 2 days ago, came out and said that they were really going out of their way to try and increase encryption, to try and curb some of the things the NSA is doing.
Yep.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, do we know, or is it possible to know, how active BlackBerry has been in trying to curb the same thing?
I don't think we've heard anything yet. I haven't heard anything myself. Mm-hmm. So one wonders. Again, BlackBerry is a Canadian company, where you compare with Microsoft, Google, and Apple, which are all U.S.-based.
And have to deal with the NSA.
There's some different legislation going on. But, however, you've got to keep in mind, Canada is part of what's known as the Five.
Right, of course. Yeah.
It's a working group involving the U.S., Canada, Britain, New Zealand, and Australia, and there's a lot more information shared between all of them than are shared to any other quote-unquote allies. You know, again, this is naive of me, but I think if we're going to espout ourselves to playing by the rules and being above board, you know, how do we handle this? I realize you have to have intelligence gathering and stuff like that, but it really needs to be done in a way that it's as least disruptive as possible, especially when it comes to citizens' legal rights.
Well, I was going to say it's been incredibly not disruptive because no one's known about it until recently. So from that standpoint, it's been incredibly non-disruptive, even though it has been infringing on people's rights.
And I guess the thing is, how can it be abused? And I think what's happened is we've seen governments done some pretty boneheaded things when it comes to abuse of rights and stuff like that. You know, and I can understand someone saying, oh, let's say they signed up for a newsletter involving gay and lesbian rights, for example, years ago, you know, and then they run for political office. Now, you know, these days that might not be considered a liability.
No, but for example, back when sodomy laws were still in place.
Right.
Where do you draw the line between going after someone for a political reason or for that type of quote-unquote illegal activity versus going after someone who is planning a terrorist attack?
And if it's something that the only reason you found out is because you held all their email and it has nothing to do with the reason for that, i.e. terrorism, then, that information shouldn't be coming out. And I think that's what the concern of a lot of people are. If the NSA wants to read my email, hey, more power to them. They're probably going to fall asleep. I have an inherent problem of, being put on lists and that because of my political beliefs and stuff like that. And I think that's where a lot of people have an issue, where they're basically hoovering up everything and then going back through it later on. And I think we've got to be more, like, selective.
Yeah, but at the same time, how do you differentiate from that and, say, what was going on earlier this year where it was basically the Chinese hackers versus the CIA hackers going back and forth trying to break into encryption?
Well, exactly, yeah.
So, I think there's a difference
because that's in terms of hacking for disrupting a power grid and stuff like that. You're not necessarily spying on you. I know, but, like, how is it different than the Chinese spy on their own citizens? So now we're saying the U.S. and Britain spy on their own.
Yep.
And then the U.S. and Britain say, oh, we're, you know, it's a little bit of some hypocrisy, to say that, you know, oh, we're much better. We're a little bit of free democracy. We don't spy on our citizens when they're doing exactly that. And again, I'm a little bit naive there maybe, but I think we need to, it's like police officers, they need to hold themselves to a higher standard. It may be more difficult, but you need to hold yourself to a higher standard.
Yeah.
Adam, anything?
Woozle wuzzle.
Adam went to sleep.
I didn't go to sleep. I'm trying to do a little extra research for an article we have coming up to discuss.
Okay. Let's move on.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we could talk a while on that.
We could talk a while. We'll never come to an agreement, but that's fine. That's like left versus right. Okay. Opera, the gang at Opera, you know.
They still exist?
They still exist. They make a browser. It's actually very popular on some Nokia devices.
Yeah, I wouldn't write off Opera just yet. Nope.
But they've introduced Coast.
Do I still have to develop for them?
Yes.
Oh.
Quit your bitching. They've launched Coast. This is a new WebKit-based browser for the iPad. I just happened to across this today, so this was presented last week, so this will be interesting to see. So,
hey, if it's WebKit-based.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about this in particular, except that if it's WebKit-based, I'm happy to see them continue to progress like this. There haven't been a whole lot of great browser options out there for iOS, so anything they can give us.
No.
There have been Safari, which comes with it, and Chrome. And we're done.
Yeah. And we're done.
Yeah.
So, one of the things I like here is that they've almost got a Flipboard-type home screen where your most viewed sites are basically large icons. So, again,
it'd be nice, it'd be nice to see iOS Safari operate something like that.
I have to say, I hate to repeat words from the article, but the title refers to this as looking slick. And I really think there is no other way to describe it. It looks nice and smooth. It's really clean. I would say it's a very slick-looking browser coming out of Opera on this one. You might even convince me to switch from Chrome.
Well, there's also they're also planning to release an Android version.
You almost have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again,
even if you're not going to do Microsoft or BlackBerry, you have to release Android.
Always worth something different to look at. So,
Again, with the lack of kind of new browsers available on iOS, it is nice to see something coming forward. The thing that I think Chrome really has going for it is the popularity of Chrome on a variety of different platforms is really nice when you can get the cross compatibility. I can look at something on my phone.
That's what I love, the syncing
and then
across,
I can open up later.
Yep.
And that's almost something, it would be nice where, as I said, I like using Chrome on my PC and my Mac, but I confess I use Safari all the time on my iPhone.
Yep.
And it'd be nice if there'd be some sort of cross collaboration there too.
Yep.
Without having to rely on 20 third party plugins.
Right. Absolutely. No, I got to give Chrome credit for that. For a long time before I discovered Chrome for iOS, I was saying, man, I wish I could just continue reading this on my computer. I'll put my phone in my pocket and try and reread something later. And I didn't realize that was a thing.
So then we told you about Chrome.
I discovered Chrome on my own, and you made fun of me for not figuring it out faster. That's what happened.
The thing that I'd actually like to go along with that, if someone would come up with a way of when you open it, you can close it on another device, that would be nice.
I don't think I've tried, but can you not do that? It almost seems like a no-brainer.
I know that you can't do that with Safari. Basically, so if you're working off of your tablet or your phone and you're reading an article and you go to your computer and you open it up, you can't close the tab that's open on your other device. I would like to be able to remotely close out a tab if I'm reading it on another device. So for news articles.
You mean it doesn't, when you go back in, it doesn't do a refresh?
No.
Interesting. Maybe I'll have to add that as an option.
Now, that might be a thing in Chrome. I don't know.
But that's an option.
And that's kind of my hang-up on switching to Coast. It would be that I don't think I want to make that. I wouldn't want to make a desktop switch.
Yeah.
I'm happy with Chrome on my computers. And to lose that cross-functionality would be too much for me, I think. I don't think it's...
Yeah, that's the one thing I find. I think if... Yeah, again, I'm not using my tablet nearly as much as I should because I don't have access to it as much because my wife stole it. But if I was using it more, as I said, I'd probably be in the same boat. As I said, I mostly use Safari now. Another option is always good.
It's absolutely
good to see. Mm-hmm. Okay, Samsung Galaxy. I guess they got some new stuff.
Some new hardware.
Well, new hardware.
Yeah,
enlighten me.
This guy is gorgeous. It's really, really nice. It's got one big drawback that I don't think I could ever get over. Jamie, this is your article. Why don't you go through this one?
So Samsung decided to preempt the most of the market on putting out its own smartwatch gear. So they released the Samsung Galaxy smartwatch.
Holy Dick Tracy, I got to say that.
Well, yeah. It's not really that surprising. Everyone's expecting we're going to see an iWatch at some point.
Yep.
It looks reasonable. It doesn't look too bad.
It's visually sexy for sure.
Oh yeah,
it's really
visually
quite nice.
It looks unbelievable. But its major drawback is its battery life.
Yeah, I can't get over it. I'm sitting here wearing a Pebble smartwatch. I love my Pebble smartwatch. I love that I can charge it once a week. The Galaxy Gear needs to be on every day. It's only got a battery designed to last a day. And that would drive me up the wall.
They almost need charging by Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Or by movement or something like that.
Yeah, kinetic charging. That's a real thing. There are some cool features to it. I mean, similar to the Pebble, you can switch out watch faces, do all kinds of neat stuff with it visually. It is a color display, which I will give it credit for over the Pebble. I think the Pebble's display works just fine. I think it's more than enough for what... It's practical. It's great.
Yeah.
But if you ever wanted your watch to be in color, there it is.
I think at this point I'd rather have a practical smartwatch than...
The camera in the band, I think I'm already over.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking at that and I'm going,
There's two things I don't like about that. One, it's extra battery and it's kind of adding a feature for the sake of it. But more to the point, it means you can't replace the band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first thought.
I can do that on my Pebble with any traditional, typical style watch band. I can take the band off and replace it. I cannot do that on the gear. My dad has had a golf GPS watch for some time where it tells you how far you are away from the green if you're a golfer.
Yep.
It's just a regular rubber band. I mean, it's nothing fancy to it, but the way the watch has been built and designed, if that rubber breaks, he can't wear it anymore. You can't replace the band on it. This is that, but worse, because not only can you not replace the band, but you'll lose a feature if anything happens to the band.
Yeah.
Well, I also wonder, you know, how strong that camera has to be, because that's going to get banged around.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That better be some serious glass covering it, because you're in trouble otherwise.
You're going to get scratches, et cetera. And it's also, I mean, granted, it is a low-powered camera. It's nothing,
yep.
It's nothing huge. The other concern I've heard, based off of reading the different reviews of people who have played around with it, is that it's actually quite sluggish to work with. That the screen isn't hugely responsive, that there's a visible display lag between yep. swiping screens.
I believe it. There's only so much power you can throw into a device this small.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's even smaller than a Raspberry Pi. There's really limitations to
well,
what you
we can
do. Well,
we also have to look at the price, $299, and it does rely on a Galaxy device if you want
yes.
to phone calls. And,
yep.
You know, so it's really an accessory. And, you know, like one of the articles, well, one of the reviewers here in The Verge, you know, they're having trouble with this. So do we consider this like a version one?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even say a beta.
Yeah.
Like, this is a beta device.
I do think the other neat feature is that you can talk into it, make phone calls with it. But again, practicality of doing this is probably not very good. I can't imagine what the call quality or the speaker quality is like.
Well, and especially when you've got competitors like Pebble that are $150.
Well, but the Pebble doesn't take calls, though. I mean, yeah, no. If you want to be practical. But no, it's kind of that way. I think that Samsung was so intent on shoving so much into this that it's almost like it's a beta version. I can't imagine that this first revision hardware is going to really take off. It needs an update and a price cut, I think, before people are really going to jump on it.
Yeah.
But I do think people are watching smartwatches, so I'm sure this will be good exposure for them either way.
Yeah. Well, and especially like with Apple, with the rumors abounding that Apple's going to get into the wearables market
yeah.
and things like that.
If that happened, Samsung... Apple wouldn't jump in with a product quite like this, I don't think. Quite like this one, I should say, because
yeah.
they're usually big on... I mean, in the past, Apple's kept features at bay that it didn't think were ready yet. Apple's yeah. not big on just kind of throw everything at it and seeing what sticks.
They'd rather have a device that they know is going to be solid and it's going to function and it's going
yeah.
to work.
So if Apple's going to jump in, they're going to be, I think, a little more refined than this one is, which means it may be a little later. But if they do kind of get in, I think we'll see Samsung refining what they've got here very, very quickly.
Yeah.
It almost is a matter of just seeing what sticks here, I think. They've put so many features into it, they'll see what's popular and move forward. With it, it's kind of a version one.
Yeah,
yep.
Good point.
It is cool though to see companies like Samsung working on wearables.
Yep, happy to see this kind of stuff move forward.
Oh yeah,
definitely. Okay, speaking of smartphones as well, Amazon has been rumored for a while. They've always been rumors that they might start producing, getting into the phone business, possibly even a free phone. They've actually
you can buy stuff on the fly.
Exactly, and through Amazon, yeah. Gee, that's a good idea. Anyway, late yesterday, they had a statement to All Things D basically saying, and I quote, "We have no plans to offer a phone this year, and if we were to launch a phone in the future, it would not be free." And that's an actual statement to All Things D. So, yeah, I think we'll have to see. I'm sure Amazon looks at a lot of different things, but they're in a lot of different things now already.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. you reach a point when you spread yourself too thin.
Yeah, yeah, and they're doing what they do very well.
I will speak to one thing they have going for them, in that the Kindle already supports a mobile connection for downloading books.
Yes.
They are at least partially in the mobile space as it is.
Well, and that's what I think kind of brings these, you know, things forward. What's the next natural progression for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's next here? We have Seagate. Seagate? Yeah, Seagate introduces a new drive. Adam.
This is yours, Stuart.
This is yours. You were talking about this, too, so I thought I was going to give this one to you.
All right, so Seagate did a thing today. They started talking. Let's take a step back from this. Seagate has traditionally been on the forefront of kind of what hard drives are capable of doing. I believe they were the first to introduce the terabyte platter. So they were able to offer 4 terabyte drives before anybody else.
Hybrid drives as well.
The hybrid drives, I think no one else still quite does what they do.
I have a very nice hybrid drive in my MacBook right here as we speak.
We got a great reviewer sitting right here.
Yep.
Today they introduced a absolute baby, a tiny, tiny, very thin platter-style hard drive. They can offer up to 500 gigabytes of storage in a 5-millimeter unit. It's still 2.5 inches across, but it's 5 millimeters thick. Weighs about 3 grams. Excuse me, 3 ounces. 3 grams. That'd be crazy. 3 ounces, 500 gigs. They're hoping to use it in tablets to offer up.
I'm just showing the my co-host a picture from the Samsung website, and it shows how small this thing is.
How thin it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're hoping to use it in tablets as a way of increasing the amount of storage space that tablets have available, at the cost, of course, of not being solid state anymore.
Yeah.
But
when you're looking at 0.14 watts on idle,
well, I mean,
and the size.
And, and they do have some things. They've said they've got some things to address issues with motion and stuff like that.
And we were talking about tablets. We were talking about even the Windows tablets earlier. One of the biggest problems we've seen with a lot of Windows 8 tablets is that the amount of stuff that comes preloaded in Windows 8 and RT really reduces how much usable storage you have by the time you actually get the device in your hands.
Are we talking crapware?
Not necessarily. Okay. Windows
Office, for example.
Windows RT, by the time it's loaded with Office and the user gets it in their hand, is about 13 gigabytes. So your 32-gig Surface, by the time it's formatted, it's down to 30 or 29 gigs, minus the 13. You really only get about half of what's advertised.
Now, they do have the expansion slot, so you can
USB and microSD, sure.
Yeah.
But it would be nice. We were talking about Atom-powered Windows tablets before, and I think that's where this device is going to shine.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if Asus or someone would grab some of these, throw them into an Atom-powered tablet, and all of a sudden we have, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's a netbook.
Yep.
It's an Atom-powered unit with a big enough hard drive that we can store all our stuff on it and bring it with us.
And because it's not
like a no-brainer.
And because it's not SSD, you know, reduced price.
Right.
Yeah, pretty impressive thing. You know, it comes with zero gravity sensors, gyroscopic motion support, some data drivers. They've got a whole kit here, mobile enhancement kit built for Android already. So again, makers can throw this in.
Yep. And they do mention the cost. They say that it costs less than even a 16 gigabyte solid state for a tablet, which is remarkable to me. To be able to get upwards of 500 gigs without increasing the cost of the units.
Right.
This almost seems like a no-brainer. This is going to be a great product for tablet space. I hope we start seeing products with this.
It'll be interesting to see, because you know people are going to test this to see.
Yeah, of course.
What it's
got to go through some series.
What it takes for it to break.
Yep.
You know, if I can, like, you know, really shake it a lot and stuff like that. Because I think that's the natural concern.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's.
I think for a tablet, you're not going to shake it as much as, say, a phone.
Right.
Right. So I think, you know, they're marketing it for the tablets.
I get
even something like the old iPod Classic.
Yeah, they always held up pretty well. That's
right. Yeah, they held up quite well.
I get the feeling these things aren't retail ready yet. It doesn't seem like they're going to production on them for distribution to some of the partners for manufacture. It kind of struck me as more being an announcement than anything else, but they do strike me as being something that we could definitely take advantage of.
Exactly. So, okay. Sony had a day, did they?
Yeah, I didn't know how else to describe this.
No, I like that.
Sony had a day.
Is it a good day?
They did a thing.
Is it a good day?
I think so.
Let's find out. As long as we know if it's a good day for Sony, then, you know.
I know what order I have these in the show notes. You have to apologize. I have to apologize for my two co-hosts sitting here. Gentlemen, I'm going to do these in the order of 1, 3, 2.
So, which means you'll be editing the show notes afterwards.
I'll edit the show notes
right
now.
Excellent. All right, go ahead. We're just going to sit back and let you go to town.
No, I need input and advice on this.
Creative heckling. Okay.
Yeah, let's go with that. So number one, let's start with something that they announced today. They're going to release a new Vita. The Vita has had some trouble gaining traction, I think, in the
Vita Las Vegas.
Vita Las Vegas.
Okay, good. I'm glad you knew that.
Isn't that an Elvis song?
Yes, it is.
That would have been bad if I had.
Yep.
The Vita, they're addressing one issue that I think people have had with the Vita, which has been battery life. They're going to add an extra hour, which take you from a typically, I think, 4 to 4.5 hour battery life into the 6 hour range.
Okay, which for a power gaming device is pretty good.
So for some of us who do most of their gaming on PCs, maybe a little bit of background. Vita is their portable gaming
platform? The PlayStation Vita is their portable gaming platform. It has replaced the old PlayStation Portable as an option. It is somewhat of a cross between the last two models of PlayStation Portable that got released. Those of you who can remember the market back far enough, the PlayStation Portable originally used what they called UMDs, something media discs. I don't remember what the U stands for.
They're essentially like little mini tiny CDs in a plastic shell.
In a plastic shell, kind of like the old mini disc players.
Yep, exactly.
Which
were, I think, put out by Sony.
Yes, they were.
Sony did patent it and had the technology.
And then when they moved away from that, they created what they called the PSP Go, which dropped its UMD drive and was designed to only let you buy things off the PlayStation Store.
Okay, just so you know, Universal Media Disc.
The Universal Media Disc. Probably because both movies and games were available on UMDs. That's probably where Universal comes
900
from.
Meg capacity, according to Wikipedia.
So the Vita doesn't use the UMDs. It has a small cartridge-style slot similar to a micro SD memory. The cartridges are similar to micro SD cards. Right. They're small. So the Vita has a cartridge slot, and it's designed to be a download platform. It's designed to let you get into the PSN and get all kinds of old PlayStation 1 games, old PlayStation Portable games, even new Vita games can be downloaded day one through the store.
Very cool.
So the Vita is their current... It's a pretty high-power device. Visually, it creates... I mean, visually, the games that come out of it look a lot better than, say, even 3DS games. It's got a lot of horsepower in it, and the cost for that has always been battery life. So to be able to get battery out of it is great. They've also made it much thinner, about 20% thinner, and a lot lighter.
Which, to get more battery life out of it, is impressive.
Absolutely.
Now, they said, what, in about an hour extra battery?
About an hour extra. Now, to do that, they have cut out something. They had it they had it displaying by an OLED screen before. And they dropped the OLED in favor of a traditional LCD. It's still touch, because the whole screen is a touch screen, but they have dropped it in favor of the LCD.
And is pros and cons?
I have to say, for what little I used a Vita, the color on the screen was unbelievable. Those OLED screens really shine. They really do a great job displaying all kinds of stuff. I assume the LCD won't quite get there, but if it reduces costs and increases battery life, I'm all for the change.
We're talking a 5-inch screen.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, 3 years down the road, OLEDs might be at that level. So who knows?
One of the biggest drawbacks of the Vita, which is supposed to be able to get online and download content, is that it doesn't have any internal storage. They're getting around that on the new model. They're only giving you a gig, but that's better than nothing, especially since the memory cards that are used in the Vita are not micro SD cards. They are proprietary Sony Vita memory cards.
Gee, not that Sony's never done that before.
Right.
Proprietary media standard.
And they're quite expensive. Upwards of $1 a gig.
What the heck's Sony thinking?
Well, they've issued a price drop on the memory cards as well, and they're going to be introducing a new 64-gigabyte model. So hopefully they're smartening up on that a little bit. But it would have been so nice if they just made the micro SD.
Yep. Just buy a micro SD and slide
it
done, in there.
And then you can use it for the next iteration of the hardware and the next iteration.
Exactly.
All right, so we got a new Vita. That's good news. That's a good start. Hopefully the Vita takes off. There's been some discussion of Vita integration with the PS4 where you can kind of use it like it's the Wii U tablet.
That would be cool.
Take your PS4 games on the go. There's a lot of good thing. There's a lot of good reasons to have a Vita around.
Hey, so, and maybe they'll ship a package with Vita in it.
Maybe. That would be... I would buy that bundle. But speaking of the PS4 release.
And Japan.
In Japan, anyway. This was another big announcement from them. They're delaying it. It's not going to come out in November. Sony is taking their... Japan only. They're taking their home turf, and they're shunting it back to February. This is either brilliant or horrible, depending on what you think and where you are. If you're in Japan, it's probably horrible. If you're in North America... rejoice, because they're probably doing this to curb any sort of supply issues that may have come up.
Which has been a problem in the past.
Absolutely.
And it gives them a chance to really make sure. You know, we were talking about this pre-show.
We'll get stuck with version one of the hardware.
Well, and basically in Japan, you know, Sony just dominates.
Between Sony and Microsoft in Japan, it's a no-brainer. Microsoft's not launching in Japan either for that week, but... Of course they're not. Microsoft barely has any headway in Japan. Everyone owns a Nintendo product or a Sony product, or I think in a lot of cases, a Nintendo product and a Sony product.
Right. Well, and I guess the same thing. Xbox One's not hitting Asia until late 2014.
Absolutely.
So again,
I think Sony knows they've got Japan sewn up. Why not force the market? You know, why not force the supply into a market they're actually competing over? And make sure that people who want PS4s can.
And they're not worrying about, hey, they're sold out.
Yeah. The other thing that Sony claims they're doing is they're trying to localize and create some Japanese-only content, stuff that's going to get released either first or exclusively in Japan.
And we've seen that before. There's a lot of, you know, because Japan is such an interesting market, there's a lot of stuff that will just go gangbusters, but just won't work anywhere else.
One of the biggest examples that I saw that uses a name that North Americans might actually know is Gundam.
Yep.
There's a Mobile Suit Gundam game coming out in Japan for the PS4 that I don't believe is going to make it stateside.
But you know what? There'll be some fanboys that will.
I'm sure there will.
Yeah.
But it looks like that's one of the big things they want to have ready to go when it launches, and so they're holding off to wait for that.
Well, I guess the other thing, too, is, again, we've got two
among others.
We've got two different markets. If you look at Microsoft, and one of the reasons they're talking about possibly delaying in Japan is, you know, because right now, you were saying you were forced to buy it with a Kinect.
Right.
You know, in Japan, not everyone has a living room.
Right.
So they have to look at these cultural things and some differences like that. It is kind of funny in this age of more and more, a lot of, you know, you look at media, television shows, we're going to simultaneous worldwide release. And yet both two of the bigger players have kind of gone backwards a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would, yes.
Definitely sucks if you're in Japan. But, you know, as long as both players are doing that, it's not like, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. I think Sony might have looked at Microsoft's release strategy and said, why are we going to put effort into a market we've already won?
Yeah. And you could imagine what would happen if Microsoft suddenly changed their mind.
That would be, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, any more stories?
There's still another one for Sony.
Number three from
Sony.
Sorry,
my apologies.
And this is my big one. This is huge.
This looks awesome.
This is incredible. I'm a big, big fan of this product already, and I don't even own one yet. Sony is releasing, we're going to put the Vita name back into this now, the Sony Sony PlayStation Vita TV. So this is going to be a set-top box similar to an Apple TV with a little bit of a gaming stint. So it's going to support Netflix and Hulu and whatever else you want to throw into there. But more relevant...
All of their media streaming?
Sony's got Crackle and some other media streaming services that are native to them. So yes, some of their media streaming will be there in as well, I'm sure. However, what really catches me here is the gaming aspect of it. So this box, which is tiny, like 6 centimeters by 10 centimeters or something, has a ton of the Vita's hardware in it, albeit with no screen. And by using a DualShock controller, a PlayStation controller, you are going to be able to play PlayStation Vita, PlayStation Portable, and PSN, specifically the PS1 originals, on your Vita TV. You're going to be able to stream from your Vita to your television, so you can play the game on the big screen if you want, which is cool. You can also use a DualShock, the PS Vita TV, and a Vita to play ad hoc multiplayer, so you can play two players using your Vita TV, one player on the television, one player on the portable. Last but not least, and this is the big one for me, I think this is awesome, you're going to be able to use your PS Vita TV to extend your PlayStation 4 to a different television. So if you put one of these boxes in a different room on a different TV, you can play a PS4 game with a PlayStation controller totally separate from your PS4.
Full-screen multiplayer.
Well, they haven't said that. That was my speculation.
True. So the idea is that if you want to play your PS4 and your significant other says, no, I'm watching Pride and Prejudice or something, you don't have to physically disconnect your PS4 and take it into your man cave.
Right. You have this other box somewhere else, which you may have owned already for the media streaming purposes or for whatever else, among other things, the gaming. I think this is brilliant.
Or hooking it up to your computer monitors for the secondary input or something like that.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you want to play, but you don't want to move into the other room? Well, you just turn on your Vita TV.
And I think it's definitely, if you're already heavily invested in Sony as the ecosystem, it's like the Apple TV too, right? You know, it's you get more features the more heavily invested. But yeah, well, no, that's an interesting,
and between,
I like that concept.
Between the PS4, the remote play on the Vita, and this alternate room play plus multiplayer options on the Vita TV, Sony is building a rather significant and impressive ecosystem designed purely for gamers. This is a great gaming ecosystem. It doesn't have a whole lot of other functionality.
And it integrates media into it quite
absolutely
nicely, too.
I think Sony is taking such good steps this generation. I'm really impressed with what they're offering. The TV box, the set-top box, is going to retail for about $100. It's only been announced for Japan, international launch pending. But the price in Japan is about $100. And then
which is on par with an Apple TV.
Absolutely, it is. And then if you don't own any other Sony products, you can instead get a bundle. The bundle includes the Vita TV, an 8-gig memory card, and a DualShock controller for $150.
Impressive.
Wow.
Impressive. Yeah. Okay.
So very, very unique and interesting stuff from Sony.
That's awesome.
All right. So we're going to have to see ahead. Okay. Let's move on to picks of the week. Adam, we may as well just get to yours because it's just a straight continuation.
Straight continuation. My pick of the week is the PS Vita TV. Such a unique and interesting product with a lot of great features. I think this is brilliant. Like I said, Sony's really taking stuff in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. I love seeing companies create innovative stuff and maybe... It's a new kind of product. No one's got it. It might even be considered a risk for that reason, and I love seeing people do stuff like this.
Yep.
So my pick of the week, easy choice, cool. PS Vita TV.
Okay, Jameson, what's yours?
I've been looking for some project management software. I know this is going to be boring, but long story short, I think I've settled on one that seems to work rather nicely. It's called Trello. I've been playing... and Adam singing in the background. I've been working with a couple of different other ones just to see what works. This one's kind of nice. It's got a fairly simple interface. Basically, you set up a board for whatever you're working on, and you've got a to-do column, a doing column, and a done column.
Pinterest meets getting things done.
Kind of.
My first impression.
Kind of. And you just kind of drag the box over.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can add in specific checklists. So for one thing, you could have 10 different things you have to complete, and it will show your progress, etc. So it looks interesting. I think it's the one I'm settling on. It seems simple enough to work for one person, but expandable later on if I have to.
So your lovely wife will be able to send you your honey-do list.
That too.
Very good. Excellent.
I didn't think about that. That's kind of scary.
You might want to think about that. See, this is another lesson for you, young Palin.
Yes.
Okay. Mine is actually, on a similar vein. I'm a big Evernote geek. Evernote 5 for Windows has been released in beta. Basically, for those who use it, you know why you love Evernote. The new 5, I've just started to play with it on the Windows machine, offers a bunch of new interfaces, new views, a little bit faster, I find, too, on my machine. They've done something with the core to make it a little bit quicker. So again, it's in beta right now, but you can try it.
Is it a desktop or a
this
tile
is the
set?
This is the desktop. You have a choice of a tile set now. You mean like for Windows 8?
Yeah. Yeah, is it a desktop or a tiles Windows 8 app?
I don't know because I don't run Windows 8 in tile.
Right. Right, of course.
I'm sure it's both. They've done a lot of different improvements. Some really cool things with searching and stuff like that. So definitely check that out as well. And if you've never tried Evernote, it's certainly worth trying. Very cool things. So, okay, any other last minute? Oh, I know what we have to do. I need you to talk about some Project Play. What's been happening on the Project Play front? Is Sony going to be a Project Play?
I actually don't know. I don't think so.
That's a shame.
They got rid of their truck. So
what's with that?
They decided it was not worth their while. Anyways.
Adam's very sad now.
I know.
Okay.
I just want to say, I don't know if it's the most recent one, but there is an Evernote Touch app for Windows 8. Works on both the RT and Windows 8 editions.
There you go. They've always been good for that.
Also, yes, I'm sad that it won't be Sony at Project Play.
Okay.
I know.
But anyway, tell us some positive things about Project Play.
One of the Big Blue Bubble is confirmed. They're now going to be there. We're working on getting our League of Legends tournament rules out now, so people can sign up for the tournament. Bunch of great new vendors. We received last week 300 pounds of Mega Bloks blocks.
I saw that on the website. It looks awesome.
So, yeah, that happened.
I've also seen it's not only just video games. We're going to be having RPG. Our good buddy Jeff Taylor is going to be running. Going to be running the 5th edition D&D.
Yep.
All through the day, you can drop in.
It's literally as your character when your character dies, a new person steps in. It's a drop-in D&D game.
Yep. Wait, is he deliberately trying to kill characters?
Jeff's been a DM. I've known Jeff for like close to 20 years, and he does a very good job as a DM. Of
hilarious. Are we going to be just, it's going to be TPK after TPK?
No. But I think it's going to be a fairly fluid game. So the idea is someone who's never played before can drop in, check it out. You know, I'm looking forward to my neighbor and his daughter are going, and he's looking forward to showing his daughter what D&D is all about.
I'll bring my dice.
There you go.
Sounds good. Uber Cool Stuff is going to have their updated version rolling up the Cosmos. So
that's
it's a take
awesome.
On
yep.
The PlayStation game Katamari, which is a cult classic, and he's literally
like the original Katamari.
Yes.
Oh, this made you haven't seen this, have you?
He's made a controller out of a yoga ball.
here in the Unlab. We actually did it. All right, we're going to have to show them the video after that.
That's awesome. So a bunch of great stuff. We've got basically it just keeps getting better and better. Like I said, the 300 pounds of mega blocks. Greg Picken, who received them all, it was literally just this pile on top of desk of boxes from mega blocks.
The question is, are we gonna get them out of Greg's house?
Yes.
Remind him of that. He has to let go of them sometime.
Yeah, I know. But there's gonna be a mega blocks building competition.
Right.
We're pretty sure we're still going to do a kiddie pool filled with mega blocks that you can just kind of jump in and start playing with.
Cool.
That actually sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
I feel like Mega Blocks have sharp enough edges that jumping into a pool of them is not exactly...
Okay, well, maybe not that. But anyways, we'll figure that out. So September 22nd.
All right.
The day before, there's also a Uber Cool... Chris McInnes and Uber Cool Stuff are hosting the Great Canadian Board Game Blitz,
Fourth annual.
And all of the proceeds from that actually also go towards Project Play.
Awesome.
So we're going to have... So that's... There's already a bunch of people signed up.
There's also going to be a podcast studio at Project Play.
Yes, there is.
Are we doing fools are setting that up. We're hoping to do a show.
Are we doing a live show?
We're hoping to do a live show.
I'm in.
We're going to be dragging people in at random.
Yep.
We're not going to know what hit them for the hot fourth mic.
Exactly. Yes. Perfect.
Exactly. No, we're going to be doing a live show there. We still have to work out details. We'll probably just wing it as we... Oh, wait. We do that anyway. So.
Yes. Most of the time.
Most of the time. So, yeah, that'll be cool. People can try out podcasting.
Yep.
So, final details. When is it again?
September 22nd at the Fanshawe Student Center. Tickets are $10, and all of those $10 go towards charity.
Okay. You can easily accessible by transit. Parking will be available.
Parking's available.
Excellent.
10 a.m. to 5 p.m., 22nd of September.
Be there or be square.
Yep.
Awesome.
That would be an and statement, not an or statement.
It's always one.
I just...
Always a freaking one. Anyway, all right. On that note, I think we should end this show.
Okay.
Because I don't think we can go much lower. Well, we could, but, you know. All right. For the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 44 for September 9th, 2013. My name is Stuart Clark.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
I'm Adam Forrestal.
Thank you, and be well.